Many lawmakers are hoping for a special Valentine from Governor Rauner today, a balanced budget. Here's what he had to say last month at the State of the State address.
The surest road to economic vitality and job growth is a collaborative effort to regain our financial integrity. To that end, I will submit a balanced budget proposal next month.
Well, this year, with plans for increased spending to schools and cuts to things like prisons and the judiciary, Democratic Senate President John Cullerton predicts balance will be difficult.
If he wants to cut the income tax by one percentage point, that equates to $3.7 billion in lost revenue.
We hear budget expectations from Comptroller Susana Mendoza and from many of those affected. Everyone from public education to manufacturing, labor, and social service groups. The governor's budget address, a preview live from the state capitol on today's 21st. Welcome to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo, and we're here at the State House in Springfield as part of our week-long visit to the Capitol. And what better way to celebrate Valentine's Day than with a little love and cooperation between political parties? In just an hour, Governor Rauner will be presenting his budget address for the year. Stay tuned for that. I'll be here with Brian Mackey, a State House reporter, to be with you until the governor speaks. But first, all this hour, we're going to be hearing about what we expect the governor to say. And we wanted to start with our comptroller, Susana Mendoza, a Democrat. A quick history lesson. She's basically the state's financial manager. She pays our bills. This morning, she released her second debt transparency report. And it's not pretty. Our backlog of bills as of January 31st stands at $9.2 billion. Of that, we owe almost $950 million in late interest penalties. Comptroller, welcome back to the 21st. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Nyla.
So I think the reason why I wanted to have you come sort of just lay out, as the governor presents a budget, as Democratic lawmakers then have to kind of come to an understanding with him, and hopefully we're hoping this year that will actually happen and we'll have a budget passed. Just a reminder for everybody, for 2 years we didn't have that happen, and so we had this impasse, which led to you creating these debt transparency reports.
Mm-hmm.
Comptroller, after the State of the State address, when Governor Rauner said, "I'm going to present a balanced budget," you followed up with him. And you sent a letter to Governor Rauner. Can you tell us a little bit more about what you said to him in terms of sort of laying out where we are financially?
Sure. Thank you. Yes. So the governor made a statement, a very forceful one at that, which I was happy to hear, that he would be introducing a balanced budget today. And that was on January 31st. So on February 2nd, I sent a letter to the governor as the state's chief fiscal officer, thanking him for making that pledge, and then offering our assistance in terms of the latest debt transparency report, which would, for the first time in history, actually give the governor the most accurate financial data with which to work and start crafting his budget. But we also made a point of stipulating that there were five key fiscal questions that needed to be answered in his budget address today in order to, by the constitutional mandate that he is charged with, actually be able to fulfill his constitutional mandate of introducing what is essentially a balanced budget proposal. So would you like to know what some of those things were?
Yeah, that would be helpful.
Okay, so number one, there's $1 billion in late payment interest penalties that have already racked up.
And so what does that mean when you say late interest penalties?
Sure. So late payment interest penalties happen when the state of Illinois goes over 90 days in paying a bill. And as you recall, we had a $16.7 billion bill backlog at the height of the backlog. So that's $16.7 billion worth of services that were rendered to the state of Illinois, yet none of these vendors had been paid on a timely basis. So because we had gone well over 90 days, in some cases over 2 years, in paying vendors for services that they had already rendered, the state of Illinois incurred a significant amount of late payment interest penalties to the tune of $1.03 billion. I mean, if you think about the lost opportunity costs of what $1.03 billion could do to help taxpayers in Illinois, I mean, it'll never be spent on schools, on roads or bridges, or I would say on fixing or even creating a brand new Quincy Veterans Home where 13 people died as a result of, you know, kind of not paying attention to what was going on in the state. So this is a real opportunity cost, but most importantly, it has to be paid back. So Any budget proposal from the governor has to include how he plans to pay down the $1 billion already incurred in late payment interest penalties alone.
So that's late interest penalties. So let's just kind of add up some of these bills.
Sure. So that's $1 billion.
We also discussed yesterday on the 21st, we talked about this whole notion of unappropriated liabilities.
Yep.
And so last week, Governor Rauner's budget chief said the government spent $1.1 billion that lawmakers didn't give them permission to spend.
Right. And that's inaccurate. It's actually, the number is $2.3 billion. These are the very same numbers.
What's the discrepancy there between your
numbers
and the governor's
office
numbers?
Is ignoring the fact that there's over $1 billion in group health insurance claims that have to be paid. So just because you ignore the number doesn't mean that the number does not exist. And this is not a number that my office made up. These are, in fact, numbers supplied to our office by all of the governor's state agencies, and they add up to what is essentially $2.3 billion in deficit spending. That's really a better way of describing to your audience what unappropriated expenditures are. The legislature appropriates, in other words, authorizes that these expenditures can take place. But in the absence of a two-year budget, which is what happened here in Illinois, the governor continued to direct his state agencies to incur obligations, even though there was no legislative authority to do that. Part of those obligations incurred, of course, are related to health care. And as you know, Nyla, you've probably covered on this show, there have been so many Illinois patients who have been denied medical coverage because the state of Illinois has been late on paying its
bills.
And
so to be clear, that's health care for state
employees. For state employees.
And so that's not what employees have to pay their premium, I should say, full disclosure, as we have this conversation. I am a state employee, as our station is licensed at the University of Illinois, so I am technically also a state employee. That you're talking about the portion that the employer is supposed to pay.
Right.
That
so you've
portion.
Fully paid into your premiums, and your audience should know that you've done everything you're supposed to do as a state employee. Every paycheck, you pay into your health care premiums. But when you get sick, Nyla, God forbid, you have some catastrophe happen. There have been so many people who have been denied their medical coverage because the state of Illinois is not paying its bills on time. So even though you're fully paid up, there was a professor at Southern Illinois University whose wife needed brain surgery, and Washington University decided not to do it because they wouldn't take her because she was on the state's health plan, even though she's done everything she was supposed to do. So thankfully, St. Louis University took on this case. But my point is, this should not be happening.
So that's a discrepancy. So that's you have it. So there's a discrepancy between
over $1 billion. It's a big discrepancy.
Right. So according to your office, there's a $2.3 billion. Unappropriated liabilities tab.
That's correct.
And then there's just the other backlog of bills. And now I understand there's probably some overlap. I don't know if there's an overlap here between...
Not with the unappropriated spending, no.
Okay.
Because that just means I can't even pay for that even if they were to send me some bills.
Okay.
But the $8.5 billion backlog at the time that I wrote this letter...
And
is
it's up
now
to $8.9 billion,
as of today. Correct. And beyond the almost $9 billion, which... In my letter to him, he needs to address how we intend to pay down that bill backlog. Otherwise, again, the budget will be unbalanced. I hope he'll do that today. But separate from that, there's another thing called pending liabilities. And those are liabilities that will be incurred, that we know are going to be incurred at all the different state agency levels, but that we have not received the invoices yet, that the state agencies have not received those invoices yet. And those liabilities total up to a little bit over $1 billion. Again, this is money that we have to account for, expenditures that have to be accounted for when crafting a balanced budget proposal. So at the end of the day, we're talking about $1 billion in late payment interest penalties, $1 billion in pending liabilities, $2.3 billion in deficit spending that occurred just under this governor alone. And all of these expenditures, as a matter of fact, have happened over the last 2.5 to 3 years under Governor Rauner. And in today's budget address, I really hope that he meets his constitutional obligation of putting forth a budget that is balanced and stipulating how he intends to pay for all of these expenditures that happened on his watch.
Comptroller Mendoza, what's your message also to your Democratic colleagues who are responsible for working with him between both houses?
So here's what I would say, that there's a lot to hear today in the budget. I hope that he addresses these five very important, critically important revenue or expenditure side items. And if the governor chooses to not do that and continue down this path of a stalemate, what I do know, and I would say this to both Democrats and Republicans, is that I would encourage them to continue to work together and, if necessary, work around the governor to ensure that we do not have another year without a budget, because the state of Illinois cannot afford to go into another budget stalemate in this year. It is critically important that we get a budget deal done. Today is the first step of that budget deal. The governor, for three consecutive years, has not met his constitutional obligation, and that's not my opinion. That is a fact-checked, absolute truth per, like, the Civic Federation, the Better Government Association, and PolitiFact, that he hasn't even come close to that. I think the closest budget proposal that the governor had to being balanced was over $3 billion out of balance. So, you know, again, it's kind of like this $1.1 billion that they say is deficit spending. It's really 2.3. Saying that it's 1.1 doesn't make it 1.1. We're still on the hook for 2.3. So we need some truth coming out of this administration today. And if we don't see it, then I encourage the legislative branches, both in the House and the Senate, to come together, put their party affiliations aside, and just get the job done for the people of the state of Illinois and help me to have a better handle on being able to manage the state's fiscal crisis.
It's Comptroller, our state comptroller, Susana Mendoza, her second debt transparency report is out today. All of these numbers we've just been talking about, we will tweet that out for those of you who are interested in following along all of these details. Comptroller, thanks for being with me.
Sure, and lastly, I'd like to say that all of these numbers are available to the public as well. They can go to our website at IllinoisController.gov, and it's the first thing you'll see on our homepage. We want to be a very transparent and open office with the public, and you deserve to know how your tax dollars are being spent.
Thanks for being with me. I appreciate it. As we are here in the Capitol, we're going to spend a little bit of time now going through different groups who are anxiously awaiting what the governor is going to propose today. As Comptroller Mendoza just said, it's a starting point for negotiations. What the governor will be presenting will be something that everyone will then go from there. Thank you. And I've got the debt transparency report here with me, too. Now, just we're going to start with Advance Illinois. They, of course, are a group that works and advocates for public education. Harry Berman is with me now. He's a board member with Advance Illinois. He's former executive director of the Illinois Board of Higher Education. He's on the board of Advance Illinois. Hi, Harry. Welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being with me.
Good morning, Nyla.
So, Harry, when we think about the past year in education funding, a lot has happened. We had the debate over changing the public school funding formula to make it more equitable. That took so long that the state missed some of its first payments to schools. I wanted to start by asking, along the lines with the comptroller, who was just sort of setting the stage of what we're dealing with, what are you all looking at? What's Advance Illinois' summation of the state of public education right now?
Right. Well, I'm glad to be with you today. I'm a big fan of this program.
Thank you.
And I think I want to remind listeners that Advance Illinois is an independent policy and advocacy organization that promotes healthy public education system so that all students in Illinois can achieve success in their college lives, their careers, and civic life. Now, in terms of the work that Advance Illinois did on the funding formula, the whole goal here is ultimately to get a larger proportion of our population, in fact, 60% of the population, with successful high school and college careers. We want to see 60% of the population by the year 2025 with a high-quality post-secondary credential. And in order to do that, there are several things that have to happen, but among those was to address the severe underfunding of K-12 education. One of the things that led to the reform of the policy was the work that Advance Illinois did to highlight that in Illinois we had things entirely upside down.
Right, so here we had the most inequitable funding formula throughout the country. Is that accurate?
Absolutely.
And now with this new funding formula, where are we at? Have schools even received the money yet, right? Because we folks remember the formula was passed. Governor Rauner had an amendatory veto that was then overridden by the legislature. Have schools started receiving payments yet?
Not yet. Not yet.
And do we have a time frame for when that will be?
I think that there are still some details that need to be worked out.
Okay.
But in order for the funds that were appropriated for this fiscal year to come forward to the school districts. And that would be a beginning.
Okay, so that's where we're at right now.
Right, right.
Even before this. So
right.
I wanted to ask you, Harry, about we've heard a little bit about what the governor may be proposing today as it relates to education. And I wanted to ask you about a couple of them. The Chicago Tribune reported last night that Governor Rauner wants K through 12 schools and public universities to pay for more of their teacher pension costs in order to save the state money. Is that something Advance Illinois would agree with?
Advance Illinois is interested in achieving adequacy in support for the operation of both K-12 and higher education. Shifting the pension costs will take away from any additional funds that would be directed toward achieving that adequacy goal. So it's not so much where the pension costs should reside. It's a matter of providing adequate funding, according to the new formula in terms of K-12, for achieving this improvement in the quality of public education in Illinois.
Mm-hmm. So what you're saying is you want to focus on the operations and funding operations. And to your mind, that hasn't happened yet, has it?
Well, that hasn't happened yet, and we'll have to hear what happens and what's proposed for the next budget year. But again, directing funds toward pensions is not going to improve the operations and our efforts to achieve adequacy in K-12 education and in higher education.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to continue this conversation with Harry Berman about public education funding as we await less than an hour now from the governor presenting a budget. Stay tuned. You're listening to a very special edition of the 21st live from the State House.
The 21st is supported by the University of Illinois Press, publisher of scholarly and regional interest books and journals, allowing local and global readers to understand and engage with the changing world. The University of Illinois Press, celebrating 100 years of publishing.
Tuning into the 21st, I'm Nyla Boodoo. Today we're broadcasting live from the state capitol as the governor gets ready to deliver his budget address. Earlier in the hour, we heard from Comptroller Susana Mendoza. We're talking to different groups who are very interested in what the governor will be presenting today. Right now, we're spending a little bit of time talking about public education with Harry Berman. He's a board member of Advance Illinois. He's former executive director of ISBE, the Illinois Board of Higher, the Illinois Board of Higher Education. Not Harry. Before I want to get to higher education, but I just want to stay with K through 12 for a minute, because we've heard a lot about so much of the focus on Chicago public schools and funding for Chicago public schools. I wanted to ask you what funding looks like outside of the district, what poverty looks like outside of Chicago, and how that's affected K through 12 funding.
This is an important people for everyone in Illinois to understand that in the 2016 State We're In report, which is a report that Advance Illinois issues every other year about how we're doing in terms of education. It was reported that far greater numbers of Illinois school districts are teaching students living in poverty than in the past. So, for example, 43% of Illinois school districts have more than half the students coming from low-income families. Just as recently as 2005, that figure was only 13%.
So
something
is
happening.
Right.
And poverty is much more pervasive across the state than I think people recognize.
And so your point being, that's putting a lot more pressure on the school system.
It does. And it costs more to educate students from low-income families. But under the new funding formula, that's taken into account. And in order to achieve adequacy, we recognize the presence of low-income families in school districts.
Last question for you, Harry. What does Advance Illinois want to hear the governor say today about education?
Well, again, we have our eyes on the prize in the long run. I think that the aim that we have is to have a commitment that over time we would try to achieve adequacy in the funding of K-12 education and to create stability in the funding of higher education. We haven't had that in recent years, and it's critically important in terms of the economic well-being of Illinois. It's not just individuals that we're talking about. It's the economic well-being of the state as a whole.
Harry Berman is a board member of Advance Illinois, former executive director of the Illinois Board of Higher Education. Thanks for being with me, Harry.
Thank you.
Education is something, of course, that is very important to the business community and to manufacturing. Joining me now is Greg Bays, president of the Illinois Manufacturers Association. Greg, welcome back to the 21st. Thanks
nice
for having
to be
me.
Here. Thank you.
So we asked Harry Berman what his most important priority was as far as education goes. For you, what are manufacturers looking for now out of the budget address today?
In many ways, it's much like what people from the education community and other interest groups across the board, we're looking for stability. We're looking for the notion that Illinois does live within its means, but that means we also should be growing. It's not lost on me that the concerns of the education community with higher poverty levels, as an example, showing up. Part of that reason is that Illinois, since really the start of the Great Recession in 07, has not been growing the number of jobs as many of our surrounding states have been doing. Since 07, we've only created a net new 8,300 jobs on average. And frankly, our surrounding states are in the neighborhood of 50,000 to 60,000 jobs each year that they're growing. And in the manufacturing sector in particular, we have seen a stagnation that's there. And so this budget needs to promote the kind of growth activities that can create jobs, adding jobs, not seeing the out-migration of those jobs. So the money will be there for the kind of social programs that your previous guests were talking about.
Greg, in many ways, we've sort of heard about how much the state is playing catch-up, how much all of these groups, whether it's whoever, the comptroller's office paying the bills, education. Do you feel like a two-year-long budget impasse is something that our economy and employers here are still being affected by as well and sort of playing catch-up from?
Absolutely they are, and we were very critical of all sides, governor, legislature as well, of not getting a budget prepared. You cannot put a state like Illinois on autopilot, let decrees from the judicial sector sort of run things. We needed leadership. We needed a new structure to make things go. We've been able to cut down the backlog of balance of bills that are there from $16 billion to $8 billion. Well, why did it have to get to 16? We could have not had that kind of situation. So organizations like social service agencies, schools, and other things have been hurt. What we want to see from the business community is a structure of taxes that makes sense, ability to grow and stay here and be competitive. We as an organization are not opposed to the notion that the income tax was increased. But we are opposed to the notion that we continue to spend money we don't have because of various outside forces. And ultimately, there is the big elephant in the room that needs to ultimately be worked on, and that's our pension issue. And that is the one that we still feel that until we arrest the growth in that and able to get that under control, we're always going to be behind this eight ball that we seem to be behind.
Greg, one of the things you and I have discussed over the years as something that the manufacturing community, and I've heard this from other employers as well, lots of conversation about workers' comp.
Yes.
And how much reform is needed in that area. Mm-hmm. I feel like we haven't heard very much about this in the past year or two because the state has been in fiscal crisis. How important is this for you? Do you have any hope that this will also be addressed?
Well, I think at the moment, I don't see that on the horizon. The political cycle that we're in is not going to
allow for an election year.
And workers' comp was on the table last year as various discussions were talked about. And we are seeing the 2011 reforms. Work comp is one of those issues that, as we say in a business, that has a long tail. The time you're going to see reforms that were put into place to continue to make some progress in that area. However, we are still out of line with our Midwestern neighbors. We need to bring medical costs under control, which is about 55% of the $3 billion that the comp system generates in bills each year. So those are the areas we'd like to see addressed, but we're also realistic that until we get through this election cycle, and I hope that whomever the governor happens to be a year from now when we're talking about the budget at that time, that workers' comp will be back on the table.
And when you mention workers' comp and the election cycle, I just want to ask, as we look at all the seats in the House are up for election. I believe there's about 30 seats in the Senate. There's a governor's race. What are you hoping? Are you hoping that all of that will put pressure on lawmakers to actually achieve a budget this year? Are you optimistic that a budget compromise will happen?
As I said earlier in this conversation, a state like Illinois with 60-some billion dollars as its budget can't be put on autopilot and should not be. So I urge the governor, I urge the legislature to find a way to come to a reasonable agreement by the end of May, and we can move on. The state will be better off if they are able to do that.
Are you optimistic that will happen?
Well, you know, I've been around here a long time.
That's why I'm asking.
I'm never surprised by anything that goes on here.
Greg Bays is president of the Illinois Manufacturers Association. Greg, thanks for taking the time. I appreciate it. I'm joined now by Joanna Webb Govan. She's the director, legislative director for AFSCME Council 31, to give us a bit of a union perspective. Hi, Joanna. Welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being with me.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Do you have any hope that the governor will propose anything today that's palatable to your union and to members of AFSCME?
Well, what I would like to hear, what I think most people in the state of Illinois would like to hear, is the governor fulfilling his most basic responsibility, which is something he has not yet done, and that is to introduce a real and a balanced budget. Unfortunately, if the early indications are correct, it doesn't seem like we are in store to hear a balanced budget. Early reports indicate that we are going to see a budget that is that includes illegal and unconstitutional schemes. And any budget that's predicated on those things is nothing more than budget fiction.
So when you're saying illegal and unconstitutional schemes, I assume you're referring to some reports we've seen that the governor is perhaps looking to perhaps remove health insurance from the list of collective bargaining items for, in other words, not allow government employee unions to negotiate over health benefits. Is that one of the things you're referring to?
What I'm referring to is the same old tired tactics we've seen Governor Rauner use over the last 3 years, where he attacks middle-income and working-class families while protecting billionaires and millionaires like himself. And, you know, this budget includes proposals that is going to take away the life savings of public service workers. These are teachers, they're nurses, people who care for aging veterans, the disabled, people who keep kids safe, people who keep us safe, and at the same time slash their health care, none of which he has the constitutional or legal authority to do.
And so, are you worried, I wonder what your sort of plan is, right? Because we've seen reports today the governor might also propose cutting benefits for retired teachers. I imagine you're worried that might extend to other retirees. I mentioned perhaps health insurance and collective bargaining. What's AFSCME's plan in terms of working with, after the governor proposes things, working with all of the lawmakers to come to an agreement, not just with the governor's office, but with other lawmakers as well?
Well, we would certainly hope that the people of Illinois and elected officials would hold the governor's feet to the fire and force him to come together to work on a real and balanced budget. I mean, this is something for the last 3 years. The governor has come into this building. He has proposed a balance that is largely out of balance, and then refused to work with lawmakers to come up with a balanced budget. And that has left the state, trying to recover from catastrophic damage that's been caused over the last 3 years. And so, you know, we'll be here to work with the legislature and anyone who is willing to work with us to come up with proposals that will help achieve a reasonable, a moral, a responsible budget. Unfortunately, I don't think that's what we're in store to hear from Governor Rauner today.
Joanna, what is morale like among AFSCME workers at this point? As we're coming off of, I'm just sort of curious what you hear from your members in terms of how they're feeling these days.
Well, you have to keep in mind that over the last 3 years, our institutions of higher education have been starved. If the legislature had not acted when they did, you have three public universities that I'm aware of that would have shut their doors. State agencies, again, these are, you know, agencies that keep kids safe, they care for aging veterans, they care for the disabled, they keep us safe. They are all understaffed significantly, and they're all struggling to reach their missions, to achieve their missions. Local governments, they didn't get any state funding for 2 years from the state, and the money they got this year was cut by 10%. So we're talking about police and fire and schools and parks. Street maintenance, we're talking about trash pickup. These are all areas where AFSCME members work. These are all public service workers where we represent the folks. And, you know, our folks go to work every day, and they do so out of a commitment to their communities. And they are doing the best they can with what they've been given. Unfortunately, the last 3 years under this administration, we have seen catastrophic damage. And so, you know, we're ready to come to the table and try to be a part of any solution that, you know, gets us to a balanced and a fair and a moral budget. But again, the governor has failed to deliver that in a budget address the last 3 years. And it doesn't seem like we're in line. I mean, if you look at the governor's budget proposal, what's been leaked so far, just the pensions and the health care component together is more than $1 billion. So we're already out the gate talking about a budget proposal today that's more than $1 billion out of balance.
Joanna Webb Gavin is the legislative director for AFSCME Council 31. Joanna, thanks for being with me. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
I want to turn now to one final group. As we've been going through talking to educators and unions and the business community, we didn't want to leave out social service providers. Eric Foster is the Chief Operating Officer and Vice President of Substance and Abuse Policy with the Illinois Behavioral Health Association. They represent more than 60 providers throughout the state. Hi, Eric. Thanks for being with me.
Good morning.
Eric, I wanted to just start by asking you what I've asked everyone else. Sort of, if you could give us maybe an assessment of where your providers are at right now, coming off of a two-year-long budget impasse, having some funding coming through over the past 6 months or so. What are your providers telling you about social service agents, their social service work throughout the state?
Well, so I think it's important that as we're thinking about in the context of the past 2 years of the budget crisis, that this is unfortunately something that we seem to be used to. And the lack of a budget over the last 2 years has just been the new addition to the stress that providers are under as they're trying to find ways to operate their services in the most cost-effective way possible, that many providers have had to restrict or constrict their services that they're delivering. Be it a consolidation of site locations or closing a program or eliminating a service that is no longer funded by the state. So many, whether it's a substance use disorder provider or a mental health provider, they have tried to control the costs. They've tried to reduce services, maintaining the core services necessary to deliver the care. And in the face of, well, next year we're hopefully going to be better off. But
and are we? Do you feel like we're a little better off this year? You're making a face that says, I'm explaining for everybody on radio, that face is no.
Better off is not a term that we would ever like to use. In this context, I think.
And those programs that closed, have we seen those programs reopen?
So there was one program in Jacksonville, Illinois, one of our members, that the Well Center, that shut down. And that was a direct result of not having only the budget crisis, but other funding sources such as Medicaid managed care services, waiting on payments for those types of things, that program actually shut down. So over the last year, there's been no services within Jacksonville, Illinois, and we just received recently heard that another provider is going to be reopening services in Jacksonville. So there is some of that hope, but again, that program reopening in Jacksonville isn't directly related to an increase in funding from somewhere. That's the provider needing determining that it was appropriate for them to place an outpatient or a residential service in that area, and they had a way of paying for that service.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to continue our conversation with Eric Foster. He's Chief Operating Officer and Vice President of Substance Abuse Policy for Illinois Behavioral Health Association, as an eye to what some social service providers, how they've been coping in the budget. We're just probably about 15, 20 minutes, half an hour, less than half an hour away from the governor presenting a budget address. So stay tuned. Just after the short break, we're going to pick up this conversation with Eric Foster. It's our 21st broadcast live from the Capitol. Stay tuned. thanks for tuning in to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. As you can hear the bustle of the Capitol, we're broadcasting from the State House, about 20 minutes or so out from Governor Rauner presenting his budget address. It's his fourth budget address. He does so in an election year. We're going to be getting into some of the politics of that in a moment with my colleague Brian Mackey. But right now, as we've been talking to different groups, different stakeholders who are paying very close attention to what Governor Rauner will be saying, I'm joined by Eric Foster. He's the Chief Operating Officer and Vice President of Substance Abuse Policy at the Illinois Behavioral Health Association. They represent more than 60 providers throughout Illinois. Eric, you've been telling us about the devastation that these providers have faced over the two-year-long budget impasse. Some people trying to play catch up, in some cases that not happening. I guess my question for you is, what would you want to hear from the governor, and then as the budget negotiations continue, from Democratic lawmakers, what do you want to hear from all of them in terms of your agencies and how to help your providers?
Well, so we had a little glimmer of hope that the executive order that Governor Rauner had issued last fall that really placed an emphasis on the Illinois opioid crisis. It issued the governor's task force on opioids. It issued the Illinois Opioid Action Plan. And within that plan, the three core pillars are prevention, treatment, recovery, and then working on reducing overdose. So those are, three of those are critical to addressing the problem. We have the treatment and the prevention and the recovery sources. And so we hope that there's an investment in those actual services in Illinois. And so if you and where we're at right now is kind of we just don't know what that's going to look like.
Right. And I have to say, as I've been interviewing all of these candidates for governor and for attorney general, every single person talks about the opioid crisis and how much of a problem is. This is a bipartisan. I hear this from both parties. You hear this all the time. You hear this from our president. You hear this from the governor. Do you feel like lawmakers are actually putting a priority on preventing this or working towards this or helping people who are working with this?
No, and it gets lost every year in the budget process. And not just for substance use disorder services, but also for mental health services. We've seen an 83% decline in funding that the state contributes to prevention services over the last 10 years. We've seen, I think, it calculated like 45% reduction in funding for substance use disorder services. And as we've heard, that there has been some information about what the budget address will include for this year. And it doesn't look like there's any change. So we have this talk about this is an important priority. This is something that we have to focus on. People are dying. 82% increase in overdoses in the last 5 years is just insane. And the idea that there isn't the push for resources to be invested in the core services needed to address that problem, it just doesn't make sense. And so we kind of are walking this tightrope of, we want to move forward, but we can't go backwards, and the funding is absolutely critical. We need to expand services, and without the resources and investment in the system, it's really hard to do more with less, and when there is no more less, you're just cutting into bone.
Right, cutting into bone, and as you're saying, lives are at stake here.
Yeah.
Eric Foster is the Chief Operating Officer and Vice President of Substance Abuse Policy for the Illinois Behavioral Health Association. They represent more than 60 providers throughout the state. Eric, thanks for being with me. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
As we've been talking to all of these different groups, I'm joined now by Brian Mackey, who's going to wrap all of this up for us here. Brian Mackey, of course, a familiar voice to all of you. He is a State House reporter. Brian, it's nice to be in person talking to you, sitting next to you.
It's good to talk to you, not from miles away.
Right. So let me ask you something, Brian, because the way this is supposed to work, right, is I think everybody kind of loses sight of this, right? The governor is supposed to, it's kind of the opposite of what we're taught about government, right? The representatives have the power to create a budget. It happens. Then spending happens. As I've listened to every single person, whether it's manufacturers or unions or public education or substance abuse or providers, everyone's saying, and of course starting with our comptroller and our $8.9 billion backlog, all I've heard from everybody is, we're in trouble here. We need to fix this. Is that where we're at? And I see you have the numbers there too.
No, yeah, we're still in a deep hole, right? So even though that taxes went up last year, the tax increase was increased from 3.75%, that was the income tax rate, went up to 4.95%. But that was a political number, right? It's because the tax rate used to be 5%. They didn't want to quite get up to that 5%. And so they finally got, in order to get enough Republicans to agree with Democrats, they went with 4.95%. If you were really trying to solve the financial problems of the state through a tax increase, you probably would have gone higher than that. But that's just not something that was in the politically feasible last year. So, no, we're still in a deep hole.
So we're in a deep hole. Where we're at is this deep hole. You and I were looking at this down in the press office. 8.9, I'm going through all my papers here. Can you give me the number of what our backlog of bills is?
Yeah, the backlog of bills is at $8,912,705,946.06.
Just to be clear, almost $9 billion.
Right, and that was $16 billion just a few months ago, but we authorized some borrowing. Normally, you use borrowing to pay for things that are going to be available for generations, like bridges and schools, but we borrowed money to pay for our expenses over the last few years just because that was actually a better financial strategy. It was cheaper. So Illinois still owes, you know, money to its vendors, to people who provide health insurance for state employees and state university employees, like you and I are, for disclosure purposes.
Again,
but yeah,
we
still owe a lot of money.
We owe a lot of money. What are we? Let's talk specifics about what we've seen. I know you got a hold of some documents that are previewing some of Governor Rauner's key points today. In general, let's start with what is he looking to spend? Where is he asking for in cuts?
Yeah, so I should say these are, it's I think literally a PowerPoint presentation, so there's not a whole lot of detail here.
Okay.
But you know, the governor basically, if you know, the top line is he wants to spend $37.6 billion, which is just about the same as the budget that was passed last year. The thing is, in order to get to that number, he's counting on doing a lot of things that could prove very difficult to achieve with a Democratic legislature, things that might be unpopular for him to get.
So let's talk about some of that unpopular things, right? And one of those, I imagine, that's not going to go down well with Democrats, and certainly not with some of my guests that I talked to earlier, in terms, especially from AFSCME, is the idea of shifting pension costs for teachers from the state to schools themselves. Can you explain a little bit more about that?
Yeah, this is an idea that's been around for a long time, and it actually was something, I can't remember if Speaker Madigan introduced it himself.
I was going to say, Democrats raised this
idea
a couple of years ago, right? To have schools pay more for pensions, I guess,
right.
I should say.
Right, and the way pension payments work in Illinois is that you have, for teachers, is that in Chicago Public Schools, the school district pays for the teacher pension cost, the employer share of the retirements, you might say. But for every other school district in the state and state universities, mentioning that disclosure again, the employer side is actually picked up by the state. And so what the speaker had proposed a number of years ago is to begin gradually shifting that cost onto local school districts. And the idea, part of the, you know, the policy idea here is that it's an incentive for schools to not, you know, pay people a lower wage. And then in their last few years of employment, one of the things we used to see is called pension spiking, where their salaries would go way up. And then the state would be on the hook for most of that, you know, higher pension cost, whereas the local school district wouldn't. But, you know, even though this is an idea that Democrats have brought up in the past, we're in a new political situation now, and simply because the governor is pushing it, especially in an election year, might make it a harder, you know, might make it harder for Democrats to get on board with this idea.
So you mentioned schools. Let's talk about funding for schools, both K through 12 and higher ed. That would go up under this budget proposal. How much and where would that funding go?
Yeah, yes and no, right? So the governor does want to increase, and this is where, again, this gets really complicated when you begin talking about education funding.
We have a PowerPoint. So
yeah, but you know, he says he wants to put $350 million more into schools using this. Remember, there was just this big reform overhaul last year, where they completely changed the funding formula, the way state sends money to schools, with the idea of giving that money to districts that need it, as opposed to districts that maybe don't need as much help because they have more property wealth locally. But even though he's talking about increasing that, he's also talking about this cost shift, which could end up hurting school districts and make it harder for them to achieve, you know, what's known as an adequate funding level. And, you know, this is where it gets complicated. There is some language in the new law that I'm still looking at that contemplates this sort of change, and so it's not even clear how much of this, you know, savings would actually be realized in a year, if it could even get passed.
And so let's also just go look at taxes for a minute here too, right? The governor's not necessarily asking for an immediate rollback to last year's tax increase. Is he the one that passed over his veto?
Well, yeah, this is the thing. So
because we need revenue. The state needs revenue.
Yeah, but he has not been willing to publicly acknowledge that. In fact, he has talked nothing but, you know, I remember it sticks in my head that he was at a Chicago business and he said that this tax increase is a 2x4 in the head or across the face or something along those lines. 2x4. He used very rather violent imagery, frankly, to describe the tax hike. And he has been consistently negative about it, calling it the Madigan tax hike over and over again. And so there was some question. Well, and he has said, I want to roll it back to 3%. So would he try to do that? Would he actually, you know, propose the cuts, which he has not done in his last few budget proposals? And it turns out he did not. He is actually counting on that tax revenue. But he did outline what he's calling a path to a balanced budget, which is this idea that by, you know, changing pension benefits for state workers, teachers, university employees, you know, that he can realize eventually the state would realize $900 million in savings, and that could be channeled into a 0.25 percentage point tax decrease. So that would take our tax rate from 4.95 to 4.7, which is still quite a long way from the 3% goal he had. And, you know, that's to say that this, you know, not even to mention that this, any pension changes are going to be subject to another big years long court fight. So this, any tax decrease seems like it could be years in the future at this point.
I'm here with Brian Mackey in the Capitol, just upstairs. Governor Rauner is going to be presenting his budget in just a few minutes, so stay tuned for that. Brian and I are going to be here with you on the other side of the noon hour for that. Brian, just as we wrap up here, we just have a minute or so left. What stands out to me and sort of pensions have always been the elephant in the room, but this year we have another one, which is the election. Governor Rauner is facing a primary challenge from State Representative Jeannie Ives. There are six Democrats who are vying to win the Democratic primary for governor. What kind of calculus is that? What political calculus is sort of involved with all of that as well?
Yeah, well, I mean, the governor clearly wants to differentiate himself as the pro-taxpayer option who's running for governor, right? Most of the Democrats acknowledge that Illinois needs this revenue. And I think what we learned during the budget impasse is that it's not as easy to cut spending in Illinois as we might have thought. You know, even when we didn't have a budget, there was still a lot of spending that courts ordered and that just has to go on because we've made commitments. And so, you know, the governor is trying to position himself as the taxpayer-friendly champion. One could imagine a Republican opponent trying to outflank him on taxes, except Representative Ives, his only opponent in the Republican primary, herself has said, we actually probably do need this tax revenue because it's immoral to have as much debt as the state of Illinois has. So, you know, the election calculus is the governor is keeping an eye on March for the primary, and he's keeping an eye on November, and that's going to inform not only everything that he does, but really everything that happens here in Springfield this year.
That's Brian Mackey. He covers state government and politics. He's here with me in the State House. Wow, it looks like we've got some people who are protesters who are coming here.
You get so many of these things in the rally. I didn't catch what this one actually is. I know there was a group called the Responsible Budget Coalition.
Right, okay. Well, we're going to have to wrap up this broadcast as you hear protesters who are outside. Normally, I guess that's happening as the governor's probably walking in, right? I'm assuming they're timing it for
him leaving his office.
Stay tuned for those of you who are tuning into the budget address that will happen just on the other side of this. Brian will be here with me, but we're going to wrap up our special edition of the 21st Day tomorrow. We'll continue to have reaction from Springfield as this budget process gets going. But I want to thank everybody who was involved in today's broadcast. Libby Foster, Robin Lynn, Alan Montesilio, Grace Stetson and Fatima Farher are our interns, and all of the technical direction and engineering support today, especially from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Scott Cameron is our executive editor. I'm Nyla Boodoo. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. As I said, stay tuned. In just a few minutes, we will have the governor's budget address. Governor Rauner will be presenting in just a few minutes on the other side of this. Thanks for listening.